On January 1971, the Perrin family moved to a farmhouse in Harrisville, Rhode Island. They were very excited because it was a great opportunity for a new beginning. What they didn't expect were the horrifying encounters that awaited them. Welcome to the Disconnected Podcast, disconnecting you from reality.
May not be suitable for younger listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back to another episode of the Disconnected Podcast. I'm your host, Jessica.
And I am your host, Angel.
And today we're going to be continuing our house chronicles. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about what we did yesterday.
Oh my God, we went skydiving.
We finally went skydiving.
Dude, it was amazing, man. I wasn't nervous. Like, I was nervous right before we were about to jump.
Yes.
Yeah, when I started... I started seeing, like, watching all of the instructors just jump. Yeah. I was like, holy shit, this is for real.
Yeah, like, when my instructor pushed me right up to the edge of the door of the airplane, I'm like, I'm gonna jump out an airplane. What the hell am I doing?
Yeah, and then you jumped first, and I was behind you. Yeah. And when I saw you just disappear, I was like, oh my God, Jesse, no! Dude, and then that's when I was like, holy shit.
Like, this is real.
I'm about to do this. There's no going back.
Yeah.
This is now or now.
Yeah. Like, can I have a refund right now?
and then I saw you just, you jumped and you just disappeared.
Yep.
And like, I couldn't see you. And I was like, holy shit. And then my instructor was like, okay, get ready. And then I was like right now? And then,
where are we going?
And then I was on the air and everything was spinning.
Yeah. Everything spun for a second and then they leveled us out.
Yeah. I saw the ocean and then the sky and then the freeway. And then, we leveled. And then it was like, they opened the parachute and that was awesome. It's the best thing that I've done.
The best thing. And then my instructor said, do you like roller coasters? Yeah. Do you get motion sickness? No. Cool. And he pulls on the strap and we start doing like 360s in the air.
And then my instructor did is I don't know what he did with the strings, but he did something that we started free falling again.
Oh no.
And I was like, holy shit, holy shit. He's like, no, relax. And he just started slapping. I'm like,
he cut the parachute.
Yeah, the parachute's gone. So I'm like, whoa. But it was a very extreme experience for me, and it was the best thing that I've done.
Yes, me too. It's the best experience I've ever had in my life.
After yesterday that we went skydiving, I can do anything now.
Yeah, I'm not scared of anything.
Yeah, like, I think
bungee jumping, sure.
Yeah, sure.
That slingshot ball thing that throws you up in the air,
the catapult thingy.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not?
Roller coasters are like, they're child's play.
Yeah,
like,
roller coasters, you're strapped into a vehicle.
Yeah, you're safe.
I fell out of the sky.
Yeah, and it was about 2 minutes.
Oh,
from,
really?
13,000 feet, 2 minutes to the ground.
It did not feel like 2 minutes. It felt like an eternity, at the same time, it felt like it happened so quickly.
I know. It's just there are no words to describe how we felt that yesterday.
Yes.
You have to live it. You have to experience it to know what it is.
So if you want to conquer a fear, go skydiving.
Yeah. Thank you to Go Jump America. They're not sponsoring us, but they were very nice to us.
Yes. Our instructors were very nice.
Yeah.
And they were great.
They were great. So you guys just do something extreme.
Yeah.
Like YOLO.
Like YOLO. You only YOLO once.
You only YOLO once. You know? So... just do something crazy. Do something extreme. You don't know if you're going to be alive tomorrow.
No.
So just YOLO.
Yeah. So just YOLO.
Yeah. So anyways, so today we're going to be diving on the story behind the critically acclaimed motion picture, The Conjuring.
Ooh.
Yeah. So you've seen the movie, right?
I've seen the movie 10,000 times.
Yeah. So, though the movie seems over-dramatized and impossible to believe, the Warrens made sure that all of the events depicted actually transpired.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, though Ed died in 2006 and The Conjuring was released in 2013, Lorraine, his wife, was a consultant on the film and claims that she didn't let the directors take any more dramatic license than was necessary.
Yeah, because they obviously, for Hollywood reasons and movie reasons, they want to make it interesting.
Yeah.
They want to exaggerate things. So it's nice to know that they stayed somewhat true to the story.
Yeah. So Hollywood is always exaggerating things.
Yes.
But in this case, it...
It's dramatized, but it's there's still that essence of what actually happened and that essence of Hollywood.
Yeah. So... the story of The Conjuring begins with the first film, which focuses on the Perrin family.
Yes.
Now, for those of you listening that have seen the movie, the story begins with the Perrin family moving into the Conjuring house.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm about to tell you, it's before they moved into this infamous home.
Before the home?
Yes, before. A little bit like a backstory. You
okay.
know? Because every family has a beginning.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So
they meet. They love each other. They have kids.
Yeah, but what happened before they had kids? They loved each other. There's always a dark side to everything.
I don't know if that's true.
I don't know.
Trying to make it so dramatic.
Yeah, yeah.
No, we're just going to talk about, I guess, what happened.
Yeah, a little bit of backstory of what happened before they got into the Conjuring house.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, the year was 1964. The Perrin family had just bought a home in Cumberland, Rhode Island, which was about 30 minutes from where the Harrisville Conjuring House is.
Okay.
Just a little bit of background on the family. It's Carolyn, the mother, Roger, the father, and five girls. Andrea, which was the oldest of the sisters and the author of the book House of Darkness, House of Light, which depicts the events of the Conjuring House in three volumes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then there was Nancy, Chrissy, Cynthia, and the youngest, April. They lived happily in that house for many years.
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, in 1969, things started to change both culturally and in their neighborhood. The streets were starting to become unsafe. Crime was becoming a problem. Let's have in mind that this was during the Vietnam War.
Oh, yeah. So, like, a lot of civil unrest and people are not happy.
Yeah, you could feel the hostility in the streets.
Yeah.
You know, there were people, like, all stressed out about what's going on in Vietnam and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just... They didn't feel safe.
No, no, makes sense.
Yeah, it was tough times. So Andrea had a Basenji dog, whom she was very attached to. These are very affectionate dogs, very energetic. They used for hunting. They used to be used for hunting.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, and they don't bark.
Ooh.
Yeah, they make this yodel-like sound.
They don't bark, but they do scream.
Yeah, that due to its unusual shaped larynx.
Okay.
Yeah, so they don't bark.
They don't bark.
You know, yeah.
They just scream in your ear.
Yeah.
Ah.
So one day she takes her dog for a walk along with her four sisters when all of a sudden the dog starts running like crazy and Andrea lets go of the leash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the dog crosses the street safely, but the girls call him to come back.
Oh, no.
Yeah. He sees them and crosses the street without looking for oncoming traffic, and the leash gets stuck to the tire of a passing car and drags the dog down the street.
Aww.
Yeah, he was severely injured, and the cops get there and tell the girls, go home, you know, just you don't have to see this.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the girls heard a gunshot. It was the dog being put out of his misery.
Oh.
Yeah, he didn't make it. So... that was a very distressing moment for Andrea and the girls.
Yeah, I mean, like, how old is the youngest there? Probably, like
four or five.
Four or five, yeah. And she sees this. Even, like, the oldest seeing that. Even if, at my age, I would see that happen, that's terrible.
Imagine that happened to your dog.
No, I don't want to. I don't want to imagine that.
That would be very...
it is traumatic.
Very traumatic.
Someone you love so much, like a little puppy, and just... No.
Just died.
Yeah, no, no thank you. So I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
That's terrible to witness.
So the parents decide to take a vacation, you know, to unwind.
Yeah.
Take a deep breath. Forget about everything for just a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
There's not much on where they went or what they did on Andrea's book, but she does mention that it was a very special and a well-deserved trip for the whole family.
Okay.
Yeah. Unfortunately, when they come back, to their surprise, they find their home completely trashed. Someone had broken into the house. There was a freezer full of meat on the basement, and that was completely destroyed. Oil was dumped on the meat and left to rot. Yeah.
That's
food,
nice.
Yeah. Food was all wasted. Someone had spilled food all over the floor.
So they didn't even take anything.
No.
They just ruined the house and ruined the food.
Yeah. They were just being jerks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the kitchen was completely destroyed as well. One of their Siamese cats was hiding on the bushes, scared.
Aww.
He was severely hurt.
Poor baby.
Yeah. It was a living nightmare for the family.
Yeah, so. Of course. Like, when someone breaks into your house, you don't feel safe.
No, exactly. Yeah. So, one of the neighborhood kids confessed that a 12-year-old kid living next door had been the one responsible.
Uh-huh.
Of course, legal action was taken, but unfortunately, the kid was never jailed or prosecuted.
No, yeah. That makes sense.
It was a very devastating, scarring experience for the whole family. So, Carolyn started to think about moving out of there because she was afraid this might happen again. You know, it's obvious. Like
you don't feel safe because even your neighbors can break into your house.
Exactly. She didn't feel safe in that neighborhood anymore.
Yeah.
So she feared for her daughters that something bad could happen to them. So she had that feeling of, we have to move. We can't stay in this house.
Yeah.
We can't stay in this neighborhood. I have to do something about it.
You know? Yeah, of course. And I mean, she's like home by herself with the girls.
Yeah.
What if, someone breaking into your house and you're not home? Okay, yeah, that's scary. Someone breaking into your house and you are home is 10 times scarier.
Mm-hmm. And Roger was usually out because he was a salesperson, so he had to travel a lot. And it was usually Carolyn and the girls in the house most of the time.
Yeah, so that makes sense why she would want to move out to protect her family. That makes total sense for a mother who actually cares about her
for
kids.
For a responsible parent to think about their children's safety and their family.
Yeah.
You know? So one day, according to Andrea, Carolyn had gone to take her to a music lesson. She was waiting for the music lesson to end, you know, killing time.
Yeah.
And while she was waiting, she picked up a Northern Rhode Island newspaper called The Call.
Okay.
So it was one of the main newspapers there. So.
Okay.
She starts skimming on the newspaper. She gets to the last page where the ads were. It was a small section known as the classified ads. For those of you young listeners who don't know what a newspaper is, it's just Google it or ask Alexa what it is.
Yes, or we can tell you right now. It's in the name. Newspaper. You get your news on paper.
There you go. It's self-explanatory.
Yeah. So just use context clues, guys. It's not that hard.
Or if you're lazy, just Google it.
Yeah.
I mean.
Or if you want to go into your parents' garage and find their ceramics, usually you use newspaper to wrap your ceramics in.
So, anywho.
Yeah.
So, she's just skimming on the page, not looking for anything special, when all of a sudden, she comes across an ad that caught her eye.
Uh-oh.
The ad said, and I quote, 9-room colonial farmhouse with barn, plus 200 acres in Harrisville, $74,000.
Oh, no.
Yeah, which today, 2022, adjusted for inflation, $74,000 is equal to about $581,000.
That is so cheap.
It is.
That is
for
so cheap.
For a 200-acre, 9-room colonial farmhouse with barn?
Yeah. Someone was desperate to get that house.
I wonder why.
I know, right? It can't be because it's possessed.
I don't know.
Who knows?
So, something about that ad compelled her.
Yeah.
She was attracted to it. And she later called the realtor and made an appointment to see the house.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. You know?
No, Carolyn, don't do it.
So the next day, she arrives at the house and meets Mr. Kenyon, the previous owner.
Okay.
He was a tall, elderly man, very sweet man, according to the parent family. He seemed warm and inviting, but also deeply sad for some reason.
Mm.
Maybe because he was leaving the house behind.
Yeah, sure. That's gotta be the reason why.
So in the distance, Carolyn sees the barn. In The Conjuring, they talk about a woman hanging herself on a tree on the property. But in reality, it was a 93-year-old woman by the name of John Arnold who hung herself on the rafters of the barn.
Yeah, that tree in front of the house, I remember the scene looking at it. Mm-hmm. It's terrifying. It looks
like very ominous, very dark.
Like it's dry and dead and just like twisted,
gross. Very, yeah, very like dark energy kind of.
Yeah, you look at that tree and you're like, something happened on that tree.
Yeah. So this wasn't the only suicide in the property, but Mr. Kenyon forgot to mention that little detail.
Ooh, yeah. Like, you know what, guys? There was one over there.
But never
but
mind.
But, you know, something else might have happened and it completely, like, I lost my train of thought. I can't remember.
Yeah. So Mr. Kenyon said the property was deeded in 1680 and finished in 1736. So
old.
Very, very old property.
So old.
Yeah.
Like beginning of people getting to the United States old.
Yeah, exactly. And supposedly it was part of the Underground Railroad.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah. And then he added, and I quote, "This is a wonderful place to raise a family."
So just imagine, like, super old. So many people have been through the house.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Just all that negative energy, all those maybe sufferings, maybe that that vibe.
Yeah.
There's because you know
bad vibes, bro.
Yeah, exactly. Because you know it's just it, not only on that house, but everywhere you go, like you enter, I don't know, somewhere just like your friend's house, and you feel this like.
An
you don't,
easy
you don't,
feeling?
Yeah.
Like an uneasy
feeling, like you don't feel good. You know, like your
gut is just like, yeah, like it's either the tacos I had an hour before or something bad happened here.
Yeah, damn Del Taco.
Don't eat Del Taco. You think that you walk into a house, is it the Del Taco? Is it the demon? It's both.
Am I possessed or is this just Del Taco? So, Carolyn was astounded by their property. It was, just imagine, it was a beautiful day. The house was amazing. Birds were chirping.
Oh, no.
The sun was gleaming in her silky white skin. It seemed that everything was right where it was supposed to be at that time.
Of course, it's perfect. Yeah. You should move in. It's inviting, it was inviting her to move
in.
Yes,
and Carolyn knew it. It's like if she was drawn to the house. So she decides to write a check for $500. Which is about $4,000 in today's money.
That is
like a down payment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was their whole life savings and she used it for the house. She was very excited. She couldn't believe it. And when she went back home that day and Roger comes back from the road, they had a heated discussion about because Carolyn had just spent all their savings.
Yeah, of course. Like, you know? It's all their money. It's all they have left.
Yeah. And Roger was obviously very, very upset. And he told her, "What were you thinking? That was all we had." And she just told him, "Just go and check the property out. Just don't say anything. Please.
Yeah.
Just go check it out."
Oh, that's so creepy. Don't say it like that. "Don't worry, husband. Just go see property."
Yeah. And Roger just sighs and concurs with her. So he's like, "Okay, all right. Like, what else is he going to say?"
Yeah. Like
it's his wife. Like, he saw how happy she was, how excited she was. So he was like, "Okay, well..."
And maybe it's the first time in a while he actually sees her this excited about something because of all the bad times they've had before that.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So, the next day, they head out there with the girls for the first time. They visit the property as a family. So, they arrive at the house.
Mm-hmm.
They get out of the car. Roger sees the house and for the first time felt optimistic about this place.
Oh, no. No, Roger, don't do it.
Yeah, he thought this might actually work. He met Mr. Kenyon, saw the whole property from top to bottom, and saw his daughters playing on the porch, and saw how happy they were.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's that's probably what convinced them.
Yeah, like seeing his girls happy.
Yeah, that's what convinced them to agree with Carolyn, because he saw how his girls were so happy playing on the porch and having all this open space to just do whatever you want, and...
and it's safe. They feel safe.
They feel safe
welcome.
Because it was in the outside of the city. It was a rural area. So.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Don't do. I keep saying don't do it. They're gonna do it, but it's still. Oh no.
So they were very nervous if they didn't make a decision soon.
Yeah.
Someone else would buy the house because it was such a big and beautiful property.
And the price was.
It was.
Cheap. Yeah. It's so cheap.
Yeah. So what they didn't know is that nobody called inquiring about the house.
No.
Carolyn was the first and only person to call. Was it fate? Or maybe just a coincidence?
Oh, no.
Yeah. So they decided to buy the house.
Yeah. They're like, we have to buy it now because someone else is going to come here and take it.
Yeah.
No one else calls.
Yeah. And the day when Carolyn took Andrea to the music lesson, she saw the newspaper, she saw the ad, and that same day was when they placed the ad on the newspaper. It wasn't like, oh, okay, so this is the yesterday's paper. No, it was that same day that the ad was placed there.
So it wasn't like, it's been 6 months and we can't sell this damn house.
No. So, no, it's just when she immediately she saw it. It was the same day that ad was there.
No.
So maybe, I don't know about it, if it's still a coincidence, but maybe it was fate. Maybe something was attracting her to the house, but I'm pretty sure you know what.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I know too.
Now, here's where the movie starts. On January 1971, the Perrin family moved into a 14-room farmhouse in Harrisville, Rhode Island, where Carolyn, Roger, and their 5 daughters began to notice strange things happening almost immediately after they moved in.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and realized that they were living with what they believed to have been an entire set of ghost roommates.
Ooh, ghost roommates. Ghostmates.
Yeah, ghostmates. There you go. At the onset of the haunting, the Perrin children felt that most of the entities that walked their halls were benevolent, if not benign.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes down when you move into a house and you're like, oh, this ghost is friendly. Nice. They're friendly. He washed the dishes earlier.
Yeah, so the 5 Perrin children even claim that the initial entities acted as babysitters on some nights. Oh. The ghosts tugged them and kissed their foreheads. Oh.
Yeah, I don't know. No, I don't find that sweet. I found that rather creepy. isn't that sweet? No.
No,
that's not sweet. It makes my stomach turn.
Or maybe it's just del taco.
Maybe it's the taco, or maybe it's the random ghost tugging my children in at sleep.
So Andrea Perrin states in her book that House of Darkness, House of Light, and I quote, "When the family went to look at the property, it was like they were home for the first time. We knew our way around the property as if we had been there before." Mm. Yeah, they fell in love with the house. In her book, Perrin writes a descriptive and poetic narrative about the family's first visit. And one can understand why they chose to move there.
Yeah. I mean, it makes total sense.
Yeah. The first few chapters reveal a series of events or coincidences that led her mother to the house. And it seems her family was destined to live in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some call it fate. Some call it bad luck.
Soon, however...
Oh, no. Here's the bad part. Here's the bad part.
Unexplainable events began to happen, Perrin said. From an invasion of flies in the middle of winter, to doors that would open on their own, and apparitions that would appear and disappear. She said her mother suffered most from the incidents.
Yeah, like in the movie.
Yeah.
Because she was mostly there by herself. She was very sensitive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It started small. Carolyn wouldn't notice that the broom went missing or seemed to move from place to place on its own.
Yeah,
she would hear the sound of something scraping against the kettle in the kitchen when no one was in there. Yeah, and she'd find small piles of dirt in the center of a newly cleaned kitchen floor.
That's not good.
And you know, when there's dirt, when there
it was dirtiness,
it's a sign of a demonic, not so good, very evil presence.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's not good that you're finding random piles of dirt.
No, if you find piles of dirt in your house and...
First of all, clean your house.
Yeah, exactly. Just first, you have to make sure that your house is clean.
Yeah, don't blame it on the ghost that you haven't washed your dishes in the past week.
Oh, damn ghosts.
Damn demons. My dishes are dirty still.
No, so that's never a good sign.
No. But also, I remember in the movie, I don't know if this is a thing that actually happened, but all the clocks would stop at 3:07 a.m.?
Yes, 3:07. Yeah. They call it the witching hour.
Yeah, the witching hour. Which is, like, I think that was the first things that they started noticing, or at least Carolyn started noticing in the movie.
Yeah, they would, like, the next morning, she would notice, like, right away that all the clocks in the house they stopped at 3:07
a.m.,
A.M.
Yeah.
And that's called the witching hour.
I think it's things are most active.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah. In the movie, they portrayed as 3:07, But I read, I don't know where I forgot, but it's either 3:07 or 3:33.
Yeah, so, or 3 a.m. People are like, 3 a.m. is a bad time.
Yeah, just 3 a.m. in general. It's a bad hour.
It's a bad hour.
So the girls began to notice spirits around the house, though for the most part, they were harmless.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few, however, that were angry.
Yeah.
So in the movie, the youngest daughter, April, tells Carolyn, her mother, that she's befriended a boy who she can see whenever the mirror in her wind-up toy stops spinning.
Oh, yeah.
Remember?
I remember that.
She just goes like starts, yeah, like the handle starts.
She like turns it. There's nothing there. She turns it back and it's like there's a little boy behind her.
Yeah. Oh. and sure enough, a sad, pale youngster appears.
Yeah.
That's in the movie.
Yeah, that's in the movie.
Yeah. In real life, not only does the real April confirm she had a relationship with the ghost boy, there was also a little girl who the parent daughters repeatedly recall seeing.
Mm-hmm.
According to Andrea, the ghost girl would appear healthy and wearing a velvet green dress or abnormally thin or weak and crying for her mother.
Oh.
That's creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the movie, Christine, or Chrissy, feels something tugging at her bed and then sees a ghost standing right behind her sister in their bedroom.
Yes.
The ghost tells Christine that it wants her family dead.
Yeah, I remember the movie. Then the sister stands up, goes to the door, and she's like, she opens it. She's like, there's no one here. Like, what are you doing? She turns back at her sister, like starts telling her, like, just go back to sleep.
Yeah.
And then the door slams.
And they all start screaming. Yeah. Ah, that was such a nice
that
scene.
The first time I saw that, I jumped.
Yeah, that was a creepy scene. I love that scene.
Yeah.
In real life, Andrea recalls instances where her little sisters would crawl into her bed because they heard voices and sensed movement.
Oh.
Yeah, Cindy once told Andrea the voices were chanting in unison, "There are 7 dead soldiers buried in your wall."
Yeah, and there probably are. So yeah. I saw this, because I see a lot of like ghost hunter videos on YouTube or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and there's these two that are kind of popular, like Sam and Colby, that's the name of their YouTube channel, and they went to the Conjuring House. They talked with people there, and they have confirmed that it is possible that there are 7
bodies
buried in the backyard because they found 6 feet deep holes in the backyard.
Oh, man.
And you know 6 feet means.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's what you use to bury a dead body.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
But no one has ever like.
They don't want to dig him up. Because they don't.
They don't want to.
Wake
something up?
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, they have them marked too.
Okay.
They're in a line like against the wall that separates the property from the forest behind the mm-hmm. property.
Ooh. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's real. Like, I don't know if they just did that to, like, attract people to go there. And they're like, oh, there were 7 bodies in the backyard or whatever. And we confirmed it. But it's still creepy.
Yeah. While the entire family had paranormal encounters throughout their time living in the house, Carolyn seems to have been the most sensitive to the spirits inhabiting the home.
Mm-hmm.
She claims that she knew something was wrong when a woman in gray appeared next to her moaning, "Get out. Get out, I'll drive you out with death and gloom."
Oh, no. This lady sounds like she's been smoking for 40 years.
She's, yeah. I was, imagine, dude, when you're...
Dude, I would run out of the house.
Yeah, I would, yeah. If that happened to me, I would be, oh, hell no, this shit's real.
I'm taking everyone and I'm leaving.
Yeah, everybody... Pack your shit, or then don't touch anything. Just go.
Leave it.
Leave it. Yeah, because no, hell no, dude.
No. Mm-mm.
Yeah. So whoever the spirit was, she perceived herself to be the mistress of the house, and she resented the competition my mother posed for that position, said Andrea in her book.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like Carolyn is the sort of matriarch of the family, yeah. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And this
like the housewife.
Yeah, this ghost lady sees her walk in. She's like, oh, hell no.
Yeah. Mm-mm.
Mm-mm, this is my place.
Yeah, exactly. So, Carolyn allegedly researched the history of the home and discovered that it had been in the same family, Arnold family, which mm-hmm. is now called the Arnold Estate.
Okay.
Yeah. So, it had been the same family for 8 generations, and that many of them had died under mysterious or horrible circumstances.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Several of the children had drowned in a nearby creek, one was murdered, and a few of them hanged themselves in the attic.
How do you... I understand that child mortality rates were pretty high during those times, but that's still so extreme. Like, how do you just let multiple of your kids drown in a creek? Like,
maybe they drowned him. They were drowned by someone.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't know. It's just odd. It's just odd how much death is on the property.
Yeah, or maybe they were having tough lives back then. Maybe. I don't know. They saw something or they experienced some very traumatic events in their little lives. And you never know.
My voice. And we're back. Sorry about that. I think I got like mildly possessed for a second. I was like Batman for a second right there.
Rachel.
Where is she?
So at least 10 people have died there, according to the Black Book of Burrowville, which was the town's public record of that time.
Yeah.
The deaths include 2 hanging suicides inside the home, a poison suicide, 2 drownings, and 4 men who froze to death.
Casual.
Yeah. One girl died after being raped and murdered, but her death is reported in another city, even though she was an Arnold.
So it's like this bad luck just followed them.
Yes. Yeah, so maybe it was the house that was just haunted or just cursed.
Or maybe it was just, I don't know.
Or the family, the Arnold family, and that's what started everything?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So the spirit that was depicted in the film, Bathsheba, she was the worst of them all. It turns out she was actually a real person named Bathsheba Sherman who lived in the parents' property. Mm-hmm. In the late 1800s.
Yes, that is a real person, yes.
Yeah. So born Bathsheba Thayer in Rhode Island in 1812, she married fellow Rhode Islander Judson Sherman in Thompson, Connecticut in March 10, 1844.
Okay.
The two were married by Vernon Styles, a local justice of the peace. Bathsheba filled the role of housewife, while her husband, Judson, worked as a farmer on their land.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, Bathsheba and Judson had a son, Herbert L. Sherman, born when Bathsheba was approximately 37 years of age in March of 1849.
Mm-hmm.
It is possible that they had 3 other children as well, all of whom did not survive past the age of 7. Let's have in mind that during this era, the mid-1800s, influenza and other rampant epidemics like diphtheria or tuberculosis were hitting hard. So.
Yeah, so it was tough for someone to survive.
Yeah.
Medicine wasn't as developed.
Yeah. So, though no records could be found to deny nor confirm these reports that these children actually existed.
Okay. So it's just rumors.
Yeah. She was rumored to have been a Satanist.
Yeah.
And there was evidence that she had been involved in the death of a neighbor's child who mysteriously died in her care. When the baby was examined, it was determined that the mortal wound was caused by a large sewing needle that had been impaled at the base of the child's skull.
I'm hiding the back of my neck right now.
Though the townspeople believed that Bathsheba sacrificed the infant as an offering to the devil, due to insufficient evidence, the court found that she was innocent of any wrongdoing.
Well, maybe she was. Maybe people were just like,
maybe she
wasn't. That woman's really rude. We don't like her, so we're going to call her a witch.
Yeah, maybe she had a bad reputation with the people there, and they didn't like her. They hated her, so they wanted to accuse her of something she didn't do.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, keep in mind, rumors get twisted very easily. People could have exaggerated.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so despite her name being clear legally, the public was never convinced. The suspected witch died as an old woman on May 25th, 1885. There are various articles online that will have you believe that her body literally turned to stone when she died, or that Bathsheba died from a bizarre form of paralysis that puzzled and frightened doctors.
Oh, maybe her body just stiffened up, like bodies do.
Yeah, but they're never more than legend of local folklore or internet rumors. So.
Yeah, so it's hard to believe that actually happened.
Yeah, so she was buried in a nearby Baptist cemetery in downtown Harrisville. So she was
buried in a church. A Satanist doesn't get buried in a church. Just saying.
Yeah, exactly.
A confirmed Satanist.
Yeah. So the parents believed that it was Bathsheba's spirit that was tormenting them. Mm-hmm. But how did the parent family figure out that the spirit haunting them was that of Bathsheba Sherman?
How?
Well, I will tell you.
Oh. I thought you were just like, we don't know. Anyway, let's move on.
The family's connection to the spirit of the so-called witch came at the suggestion of paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Ooh, the Warrens.
The Warrens. Ed Warren was a World War II veteran and a former police officer who became a self-professed demonologist after studying the subject on his own.
Okay.
His wife, Lorraine, claimed to be a clairvoyant, which is a person who claims to have a supernatural ability to perceive events in the future.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she was a medium too, right?
And she was also a medium who was capable of communicating with the demons that Ed discovered.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were professional paranormal hunters. The pair, both Roman Catholics, were also involved with a string of other high-profile cases of hauntings, including the Enfield Poltergeist and the Snedeker House in Connecticut.
Yeah. So they were pretty big during their time.
Yeah, they were pretty famous. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In 1952, Ed and Lorraine founded the New England Society for Psychic Research. Okay. It's the oldest ghost hunting group in New England. They quickly gained notoriety as respected paranormal investigators after their initial investigation of the Amityville hauntings.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know they did those.
Yeah.
Like
they did. Remember in the film, I don't know if you remember, but in The Conjuring, at one of the last, or maybe the last scene, Ed is, you know, the wind-up toy that they got from the house?
Yeah, the one where the mom saw the little boy.
Yeah. You know, they had, like, remember in the Warren's house, they had, like, a little special place to put all the haunted...
Oh, yeah, like a like room artifacts. Where a priest comes blessed every week or something like
or every
that.
Month.
Yeah. Every month, yeah.
Yeah, so Ed places the wind-up toy on the shelf next to all of the other haunted stuff. And then Lorraine says, oh, Ed, this priest called me and he wants us to go visit a house, a haunted house in Long Island.
Oh, so, that's yeah. The...
So that was like a little, like a small, like Easter egg that they were going to the Amityville house.
Yeah, okay.
So I found that pretty cool. Like, oh, yeah. They mentioned it.
They're connecting them.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah.
So Carolyn told Ed and Lorraine about an incident that had happened a few years earlier. She said that she had been lying on the sofa when all of a sudden she felt a piercing type of pain in her calf and then the muscle began to spasm.
A cramp.
Like, oh shit.
Let me stretch my leg.
Upon examination, she noticed a puddle of blood at the point of impact.
Not a cramp.
That's not a cramp.
No.
She checked for bees or anything that could have caused the puncture in her leg, but found nothing.
Okay.
In her daughter's book, Andrea Perrin describes the wound as a perfectly concentric circle, as if a large sewing needle had impaled her skin.
Definitely not a cramp.
When Carolyn told Anne and Lorraine this story in conjunction with the tale of Bathsheba Sherman, Lorraine suggested that she, Bathsheba, could have taken the needle with her to the afterlife and used it to stab Carolyn in the calf.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, when you die, you take something with you to stab people with.
In this case, it was a kneading needle.
I'm taking a fork with me. I call it dibs. I call dibs on the fork.
From that point on, Lorraine referred to the demonic presence in the Perrin family as Bathsheba.
Yeah, even the name. Like, who names their child that? Even it sounds...
Who, Bathsheba?
Evil.
Bathsheba?
Yeah.
I know, but you know, like back in the day, they would... still today, there's just some names that you're like, what the hell? Did your parents love you?
Yeah.
That's a creepy
name creepy you got their name.
And crappy name you have.
Yeah.
Like, but Bathsheba, that's like a witch's name.
That's a witch's name, yeah. Yeah. Makes sense why the people would think she is one. It's just the name.
Just the name, man. According to Andrea, the family experienced other spirits as well that smelled like rotten flesh and would cause beds to rise off the floor.
They're helping them move the furniture. The demons are, all right, guys, ready? 1, 2, 3.
Billy, you got to do it better, Billy.
I am lifting. No, you're not. I can see you're not lifting.
She claims her father would enter the basement and feel a cold, stinking presence behind him. Yeah, they often stayed away from the dirt floor cellar, but the heating equipment would often fail mysteriously, causing Roger to venture down. Yeah. Mm. In the movie, the parents discover an old cellar in the house, remember?
Yeah.
However, this is no playground. The cellar is the source of many of the movie's creepiest paranormal happenings.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
It is the scariest place of the house.
Yeah, that's where most of the activities.
And that's where they think the whatever is controlling everything evil is.
Bathsheba.
Yeah, is down there.
Yeah. In real life, in an interview for The Conjuring, Carolyn said the cellar was the place in the house with the biggest sense of dread.
Yeah.
Yeah. Christine agreed, saying, "You don't go there. It was in the cellar where the parents could fear the movement of spirits." Much like when Carolyn hears clapping in the film.
Oh, yeah, I remember the clapping
game. They used to play hide and seek, and they would just clap once. They only had 3 claps. But, uh-huh. And then they heard it, like, so I think one of the girls, she hid in the closet, and that's where the cellar was, but it was all, like, blocked.
Yeah.
With wood. So, I mean, why was it blocked?
Don't unblock things that are blocked. They're blocked for a reason.
Yeah, yeah.
So. And also, I remember in the movie... Carolyn goes like into the cellar and like she's like, I think she has like a flashlight. No, not a flashlight. She has like a lighter or something.
A lighter, yeah.
Yeah, she has a lighter so she can't really see much. Mm-hmm. And behind her, you see little hands come up behind her head and clap twice and the light goes out.
Yeah, shit's creepy.
Dude, man. I get chills just talking about it. It's just so scary.
Yeah, over the 10 years that the family lived in the house, the Warrens made multiple trips to investigate. At one point, Lorraine conducted a seance to attempt to contact the spirits that were possessing the family. Mm-hmm. During the seance, Carolyn became possessed, speaking in tongues and rising from the ground in her chair.
Nope.
Andrea claims to have secretly witnessed the seance. Imagine being a 12-year-old kid and witnessing how your mother is being possessed by an evil entity and floating in midair.
No, thank you. I wish to not do that. No, not... Even like at my age, seeing that happen to my mom. No.
It's not fun.
I don't want to.
It's not fun at all.
I don't want to. I pass. Yeah. I'll pass.
I thought I was going to pass out, Andrea said. My mother began to speak a language not of this world in a voice not her own.
Yeah, no, that's... When people start doing that, go get a priest.
Yeah. Her chair levitated and she was thrown across the room.
Yeah. Dude, the...
So they weren't friendly ghosts.
No. When someone throws you across the room, a person who throws you across the room is not friendly. A demon? Definitely not.
No.
And the room that she was thrown across is big. It's at least 20 feet. Like from side to side.
Mm-hmm.
So for her to be thrown that far from one side of the room to the other and slammed like against the wall.
This is a 120-pound person.
Yeah, at least.
At least. And imagine having all that force to lift it and the chair and just throw her across the room.
Yeah.
That you need a lot of force.
Yes.
A lot of energy.
You need something not human to do that. Because a person cannot throw someone else that far.
No.
Unless you're super ripped.
Exactly. Or the Hulk or something.
Or the Hulk. But like, it has to be something strong and something strong that really wants to hurt you to do that.
Yeah. Though the movie version of events culminates with Ed performing an exorcism rather than a seance, Lorraine insists that she and her husband would never attend one since they must be performed by a Catholic priest.
Yes.
So, after the seance, Roger got very agitated. He was a skeptical. You know,
hey,
just like you, but he didn't want to believe what was going on, even though he witnessed strange happenings himself. But always tried to find an explanation to everything.
There's always two sides. It could be explainable.
I mean, I get it being skeptical, like being or you or Roger skeptical or anyone listening. But. There's a point that you just can't find an explanation to what's going on.
Yeah.
And you just have to say, you know what? This shit's not sighing. This is not a draft bumping into things. It could be, but not a... I mean, come on.
Maybe it was windy that day and...
You see something throw your partner across the room. You're going to say, oh, it's just a draft.
It was a wind.
Check the wind.
Was open.
The window from the kitchen was open.
Yeah, sometimes we get crazy drafts in here, guys.
No.
No, I get that. But maybe he was just Maybe he didn't want to believe it because he didn't want to think that that could be a possibility. That's something that evil could be in his house.
Yeah, I guess so. But, I mean, that's his wife. Like, I don't think his wife would make this up for attention.
Yeah,
like,
you know. Or even his wife, who probably does not play sports, jump that far across the room.
Exactly. Yeah, there you go.
Backwards.
So he kicked the Warrens out. He was worried about his wife's mental stability.
Yes.
According to Andrea, the family continued to live in the house due to financial instability. So they couldn't move because they gave all their life savings to that house. They just...
Yeah, it's not like you can just, you know what, guys, this is happening. We gotta go. It's we couldn't leave.
They couldn't leave because they didn't have any money. So they were able to move out in 1880, at which point the spirits were silenced and the haunting ceased.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So according to the Perrin family, they're still being haunted by Bathsheba. During the filming of The Conjuring, the entire family was invited to the set. Initially, they were all going to go, but at the last minute, Carolyn, the mother, got cold feet and changed her mind.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, she claimed that she didn't want to make the trip, but there also had to be some trepidation or fear on her part to dig up the past, right?
That makes sense. If you experience something like that, I wouldn't want to relive that.
No, like, that's a very traumatic experience. I don't want to touch it.
No. I don't want to wake it up.
I don't want to remember it. Like, I remember it. It was a very scary, scarring experience for me. I don't want to go back and relive it.
No.
No.
Mm-mm.
So, I mean, I don't blame her. She was right. She was like, no, I don't want to.
You know. No, I don't want to. No, it makes sense.
Yeah. So, I agree with it, with Carolyn.
Yeah.
So, Andrea claims that while the family was being interviewed, a rogue wind swept over the family, knocking down cameras and lights and anything that surrounded them. They all agreed it was Bathsheba's curse. You know,
maybe the window was open and it was just really strong draft.
Yeah, the family have an inside joke that whenever something weird or bad happens to them, they say it's Bathsheba's curse, you know?
Yeah.
So they try to
make it
as
light as possible.
Yeah, exactly.
So, that makes sense. I mean, I cope with humor too. Yeah. So when something bad happens, I try to make it funny. Some people don't like that. They're like, why are you laughing right now? I'm like, I don't want to cry, so I might as well make a joke out of it.
Yeah, so it wasn't until they returned to their hotels that evening that they heard about their mother falling and breaking her hip at the exact time that the wind swept over them.
The draft was that strong?
Yeah, or Bathsheba's curse.
Or just bad luck.
Yeah, when the family made it to their mother's hospital room, they claimed that she sat up in her bed and said, Bathsheba's curse. She does not want to be exposed.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. So, the house today, or no, last year, September 2021, was being sold for $1.2 million.
Okay.
Yeah. Corey and Jennifer Heinzen bought the house in June of 2019. And... Mm-hmm. Have already documented several instances of paranormal activity.
Yeah, they sleep in a room. You walk into the house or into the property. Everything they have is in one area, in one room. And then the house begins after that room.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't sleep in the main area of the house, which is smart. They sleep somewhere else, but they claim to hear like stuff happening.
Yeah, like footsteps or knocks or... lights flashing in rooms that don't have light in there to begin with.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so...
They have seen doors open on their own, disembodied voices, and EVPs, electronic voice phenomena.
Yeah.
So, but, however, the Heisens want to repair and preserve the house.
Yeah.
Shoot a documentary, maybe? Or perhaps open the home up for paranormal tours.
These are people who are... This is... their life. Their life is investigating paranormal stuff. Yeah. And for this house that is so iconic to the paranormal community, it makes sense for them to want to preserve it and keep documenting and keep trying to make sense of, is it just energies that are stuck there? Is it actually ghosts?
Yeah.
Is it something darker?
When Andrea, she heard about this, that they were planning to make a documentary or open the home up for paranormal tours, she said, okay, yeah, I get it. You know, just just make sure, remember, this house is not a circus. You have to respect what happened. You have to respect the house, because this is no joke. Like, this happened to us for reals. Some people, and they say that some people even thought, or they still think that they're just a hoax, that
that
they wanted attention.
It could be a hoax. Yeah,
and Andrea, in an interview, she said that she would hear all those kinds of stories, and her mother and Andrea would just say, you know what, if you want to believe it, it's fine. If you don't want to, whatever.
Like, yeah.
We know it's real. We know what happened. So, like, they don't care.
Yeah.
Because they know what happened. And
like, they believe it. They experience it. Like, yeah, I get that, though.
I know.
Like, I don't really... It could be a hoax. I don't want to just subscribe to one idea and be like, yeah, it did happen, or no, it's all fake. Like, I didn't live that, so I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So this was the story behind The Conjuring. What do you think?
That was
intense.
Intense. It was terrifying.
And it was real.
And I'm losing my voice again.
And thank you guys for listening. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
If you're listening to this, thank you so much. We love doing this podcast. It's our little, like you said, it's our baby. We're nurturing our baby.
Yes, like always, I call top half of baby. I want arms and head.
I mean, sure.
Sure, you can have it.
Yeah, you guys can find us on Spotify, Anchor, and all major platforms as The Disconnected Podcast. Please like, share, rate us with 5 stars so we start climbing the charts.
Please. Yeah?
And leave a review wherever you're listening to us right now and support the show.
Yeah. And if you leave a review, don't say oh,
I hate you.
These guys suck. They're terrible. Like, leave like constructive criticism. Yeah, maybe something you liked and something you didn't like and wish we could do better.
Yeah, give us a positive feedback, like recommendations or what we can do better.
Yeah.
Or maybe say, I like this episode. I like especially this part, but maybe don't do this, or maybe do this for next time. Like,
yeah.
You know, leave a positive feedback.
Give us suggestions.
Give us suggestions, exactly. Don't forget to enable the notification bell to get notified every time we upload a new episode. And if you guys have a scary story or a near-death experience or an out-of-body experience, maybe a paranormal encounter that no one believes you had. Or maybe you were abducted and studied by aliens.
Maybe you were probed by aliens. Please tell us. That would be fascinating.
We want to hear that. So you can trust us. We'll believe you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And you can stay anonymous. You don't want us to say your name.
So if you send it with your emails and your name at the beginning of the email, you can just be like, please don't say my name, and we won't.
Yeah, so just share your story with us. So what are you waiting for? Just email us at thedisconnectedpod@gmail.com, and you might hear your name, or maybe not.
Yep.
On future episodes.
Yes.
Your story on future episodes. So The Disconnected Podcast merch will be coming soon.
Very soon.
So stay tuned for that.
Yes.
And what else?
You can also find us on Twitter as @DADisconnected, on Instagram as The Disconnected Pod, Facebook and Tumblr as The Disconnected Podcast, and please support the show. You know, if you can, make a monthly donation. It could be $1 or $5. Or $4,000. Any donation is a good donation.
Yeah.
Maybe not $4,000, but you know.
If you want to.
If you want to. If you feel like you have a giving heart and you want to give us $4,000.
Okay.
I'm exaggerating, but you know.
No, you're not. You're not. Just give us $4,000.
Just give us, please. Please help. Please help us.
We are desperate.
We're desperate for $4,000. Yeah,
because we want to keep doing the show. We love this. We love the show. We've never done podcasts before.
Mm-mm.
This is our first time doing it. And so far, we love it.
We are enjoying it so much. So much fun for us.
Oh, yeah.
Exploring these stories that may be explained by science or may not be explained by anything.
No. So,
and I have to keep just denying what I'm seeing right in front of me.
Exactly. So, we love researching all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We have fun, and we love exchanging opinions and having conversations about all the unexplained, the mysteries, the paranormal, you know, all that shenanigans.
Yes.
Yeah. So, we don't ask for much. $1, $5, $20, whatever. The link will be on the show notes.
Yes, it will be.
Yeah. So everything, if you guys don't remember a thing we just said, everything's going to be on the show notes.
Yeah, so you just scroll down a little bit, wherever you are, you put the description, and everything is going to be on there.
Yeah.
So don't worry about it.
So thank you very much. We love you.
We love you so much.
We love you.
Okay, no, too much. Pull it back.
Yeah. So this has been the Disconnected Podcast, disconnecting you from reality. I am your host, Angel.
And I'm your host, Jesse.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye. Goodbye.